the most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six reasons to appreciate Tomorrowland. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 57 of the World of Walt podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation for the week of January 31st, 2016. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans, whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Today's podcast is sponsored by Ear to Their Travel. If you're planning a trip to any Disney destination, give Phil at Ear to Their Travel a call. Phil's a former Disney cast member, so he really knows how Disney works. He can help you plan all the details of your trip at no extra cost to you while making sure you get the best deal on your vacation. You can reach Phil at eartotheirtravel.com. The Tomorrowland section of the Magic Kingdom is a favorite for many folks. Can you believe that when Tomorrowland debuted on opening day in October 1st, 1971, there were only two attractions? Yes, the only things you could do were ride the Grand Prix Raceway and then get out of Tomorrowland with the Skyway to Fantasyland. However, Tomorrowland quickly expanded and has changed quite a bit over time. The 1994 sterile whites and blues made way to a more colorful Tomorrowland that represented a galactic spaceport, and more recently we've seen the addition of a more metallic look and darker colors. It seems that it's hard to keep up with a vision of tomorrow. Even though it's always a day away, it always seems to arrive and then quickly become outdated. So even though it's hard to keep up with tomorrow, we're going to try today by taking a look at the top six reasons to appreciate Tomorrowland. To help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a former Disney World cast member and someone who knows that tomorrow is just a dream away, Aaron Cohen. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to getting into this one.
Me too. I think it's going to be fun to discuss some of the things that we really appreciate about Tomorrowland. So I just want to dive right in because I think we've got a lot of material to cover. And so number one, Aaron, is going to be right over to you.
So for me, Tomorrowland has always been my favorite of the Disney World lands. And my favorite attractions are in other lands. And there's certainly things I like about all the areas. But as a kid, I loved science fiction and outer space and aliens and this kind of vision of the future. And walking through Tomorrowland was a vision of the future. And the theming, as you said, has changed over the years from this very kind of white, almost austere look to more color, to metal. And it's definitely advanced with the times, but at the same time, the aesthetic has always been kind of this retro future. It doesn't look like something you'd see in necessarily a science fiction movie today about the future. It's kind of more of a 1950s, 60s view of the future, which I think is really cool. And really, it's very Disney, and it's also very, just as a kid, that's what I grew up seeing. So I love that aesthetic and that style. And they have some fun with it. They've got the metal palm trees instead of real palm trees. I think it's kind of a cute, this kind of silly touch. At night, it's all lit up with colored neon, and it's beautiful, and I highly recommend anybody at the parks to just walk through Tomorrowland at night, because it's quite a sight. And there is some elements of Walt's vision of the future involved in the park, even to this day. For example, most, if not all, of the plants in the Tomorrowland area of the park are edible. Now, I don't necessarily recommend that someone just go up and grab a handful of them and start eating them, but you could. And that plays into the vision of the future where there's more sustainability, and there was, terraforming deserts that came up in Horizons over Epcot years ago. And it really just kind of brings it into the future in a way, which I think is just really cool.
I think those are all great points. The theming of Tomorrowland, I think, is extremely immersive, and I really like the retro future look. So like you said, the sterile whites and the soft blues, which were probably very forward-looking in 1971, just don't necessarily play out over the decades. And when you're building things with steel and concrete, it's hard to keep up with the future because the future gets here and then you're behind. So this retro future approach to Tomorrowland, I think, was brilliant. You mentioned the nighttime lights, and I think that Tomorrowland is one of the most beautiful sections of the Magic Kingdom at night when all of the red neon lights come on. It's just a completely different experience at night than it is during the day. And so for folks who maybe haven't gone through Tomorrowland after The Sun Goes Down, I would highly recommend doing it. And I think there are a lot of storytelling touches. So you mentioned the power palms. Power is, of course, an important topic all times, but I'm sure it will continue to be in the future. And so the story of the power palms that, as far as the backstory goes, collect energy into the orbs, which look like coconuts, and then feed that power to the Tomorrowland Light and Power Company, are all part of the backstory that happens around this working spaceport that is Tomorrowland. So the theming there is really deep and really beautiful, and I think it makes Tomorrowland a very special place.
Yeah, there definitely is an element of fun. It's not all just, you know, austere metal and columns and all that. There definitely is that kind of Disney fun future. And I think one thing I liked about it as a kid growing up especially was, so Adventureland is this jungle, and while I've never personally been to a jungle, they exist. You can see pictures on the internet. You can, not when I was a kid, of course, but you can watch TV and see pictures of a jungle. You know, Frontierland is loosely based on, like, actual places, you know, an actual old West America. You know, Fantasyland is made up, but it's fun, and it's, you know, something about Tomorrowland, though, because it was something that didn't exist yet, and maybe never will, we don't know, but could, was just the vision of it was something that really struck me as a kid and is carried well into adulthood, where every time I'm there, I just kind of lose myself in this futuristic vibe of it, and I think it's one of the most impressive theming jobs in the parks.
I agree, and I like your point about how all of the other lands represent something that has already existed. And Tomorrowland represents the things that we hope will exist. And so there's a forward look, of course, in time frame, but I think also in optimism and in looking forward to the future. So there are so many great things about the theming in Tomorrowland.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Number one, theming, a good one. So number two, I'm going to go to an attraction in Tomorrowland. It's a relative newcomer and one that I think breaks ground in a lot of different ways. I am going to go to the Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. So I really do enjoy the characters of the Monsters, Inc. movies, but I think this attraction has done some pretty unique things in that during the queue, it allows you to text in jokes. So this is a way of taking interactive queues really to a new level where people can mold the experience that is about to come. They can use their smartphones, which are constantly using all the time. And then when you get into the show, the technology behind this on-the-fly animation is just extraordinary. And it's done in such a seamless way. So I think a lot of folks go in there and they think, wow, this is a neat show and it's interactive. But to think about the new technologies that had to be developed so that these live on-the-fly animations could interact and talk to the crowd, I think is just amazing. I love the corny jokes in the show. I love Roz, who is, of course, always watching. I think Buddy Boyle is a blast. And I also really enjoy how they include the audience. So they snip in these different shots of people who are in the audience, like that guy or someone who's going to buy churros or someone who disappears. The jokes are fun. The interactive nature is fun. Getting the audience involved is fun. I am just a huge fan of Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor, and I think it doesn't get the love and attention that it deserves.
You know, it's funny with that one because when they first brought, you know, put it into Tomorrowland, I was definitely one of the ones who wondered why it was there, because it didn't seem to fit the rest of the motif of the land. You know, it wasn't about outer space, the future, or anything like that. It was about fictional monsters telling jokes. And I definitely was a little bit dubious. Not that I didn't think it would be a great ride or attraction, but I just didn't think it belonged in Tomorrowland. I'm pretty specific about, like, the experience that I expect to see when I'm in Tomorrowland. But I gave it a shot, and I have had my joke pick going through there once.
But, wow. You're famous.
I know. Apparently. But, you know, after having now seen it multiple times, it kind of does belong there. I mean, and you've got kind of the future-y technology of the Monsters Laugh Floor, where, you know, they're saving screens, and it's all very kind of like tech-looking and all that. But once you get past the the fictional aspects of it, like you said, the technology is jaw-droppingly amazing, and the seamless, you know, transition, you know, it really does, yes, you're watching a screen, but it's very easy to lose sight of that and think you're actually watching monsters on stage, you know, joke with the audience and talk to people. And, you know, and what is the future if not technology?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's a fun attraction and everything like that, but as a showcase for technology and what's possible, it really just, it belongs, it's right at home there.
Yeah, that's, I think, an excellent point. And it's interesting that there are a lot of places you can go across the Walt Disney World Resort and you can watch a movie or a show that is, I hate to use the word static because that sounds a little derogatory. That's not what I mean, but is the same each time. But Monsters, Inc., because of the interactive nature of it, is a different show each time. And as someone who's in the audience, you get a different experience. You may get to be part of the show. You may get your 15 seconds of fame. And I think that's something that's really unique about how the show unfolds. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So that was number two. Number three, Aaron, back over to you.
So I'm going to go to a classic and one of the, you know, can't miss it attractions in the park. Not only because you have to ride it, but also you can't miss it. It's huge and it's right there. And that is Space Mountain. I think most people have heard of Space Mountain. Been around for a long time now. And it's a roller coaster, primarily in the dark, space themed. There's a star field in the background as you're zipping around. And yeah, there are some cool special effects that happen. But it's a lot of fun. It's not super rough. My wife, who doesn't like roller coasters, has been on it. And not only is it a Disney classic, but it's just, it's a fun ride. It's really just because you can't see what's going on around you. You just see stars as you're zipping through. It really does kind of make you feel like you're flying through space. And it's one that I usually have to ride when I'm there.
Yeah, I think Space Mountain is one of those must-do classic Disney attractions. And it is interesting how the fact that it's in the dark changes the experience so much. I think I saw somewhere that the maximum speed of Space Mountain is something like 35 miles an hour. You probably go much faster getting in the on-ramp to the highway. But the turns, the tight spaces, the darkness, the star fields make it into an experience that's really much beyond just the physical happening that is going on. So I've always really enjoyed Space Mountain. It's easy to see why it has huge lines. And I'm really glad that the Walt Disney World Imagineers have continued to invest in Space Mountain. So creating the interactive queue, because there's a very long walk and sometimes a very long wait to get to the load area. The fact that they did a lot of work to close up the, I think they called them light holes or the places where maybe the sun was peeking in. And something I always enjoy about Space Mountain is that it's kind of a different experience day versus night. I mean, the inside of the ride is the same, of course. But if you go at night when your eyes are already somewhat attuned to the dark, I think you can see a lot more detail in the star fields, and the neon in the loading area is just that much more intense and bright. So Space Mountain is definitely a must-do Disney classic.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, because it is in the dark, it seems a lot rougher and a lot faster and a lot more intense than it really is. Because you can't see the track in front of you, so you really have no idea what's going to come next. And it really is just kind of a great example of making a really fun attraction using, you know, just really kind of simple tricks, which is really kind of a hallmark of Disney Imagineering, especially years, you know, decades ago. And the Space Mountain building is iconic. It is kind of, when people think Tomorrowland, they think the Space Mountain building. There's been graphic novels, there's actually a graphic novel called Space Mountain where the building was a central part of it. That building actually appeared in the Tomorrowland movie. If you look at the cityscapes of the Tomorrowland city in the movie Tomorrowland that came out recently, Space Mountain's right there. So it's like, you know, even in this movie about this futuristic city, you could not have the Space Mountain building in it. It's that much a part of the Tomorrowland motif and thought process. So it's definitely an integral part of Tomorrowland that I think everyone has to go on at least once, hopefully several times.
Yeah, and you're right that it is truly an iconic shape, and maybe past Cinderella's Castle and Spaceship Earth, I would say it's one of the most recognizable buildings and shapes that Walt Disney World has created. It really just makes a statement and is beautiful in its simplicity. I saw some pictures of some of the early concept drawings of Space Mountain, which had much more ornamentation on it, a lot more spires and I don't know, things that wrapped around it. And the story goes that they didn't add those things. They kind of ran out of money or had to cut back on the budget. But ultimately, I think that was a good thing, because the simplicity of the design, I think, is part of its beauty.
Well, and here's a little bit of, you know, Disney trivia, I guess we'll throw in here. When they were designing the ride, they wanted a basically flat surface to project the stars onto, and couldn't do that because you need structure, you need load-bearing, you know, columns and all this to hold the ceiling up so it doesn't collapse on you. And their answer was to put the beams on the outside of the building. So those white beams that are kind of the spokes that are going around are essentially the beams that would be on the inside, but they couldn't have them on the inside because they wanted that to basically be a giant screen. So what stemmed from Imagineers trying to solve a problem really helped make that iconic look. I think the building would look very different if it was just smooth outside, or, like you said, had weird ornamentation on it, and didn't have just that simple, you know, pyramid design with those columns, those spokes going all around it. So it's just really kind of a neat little bit that they just did it because they had to, and now it's such a part of the look of that building.
Wow, that's a great piece of trivia. I didn't know that. I learned something new today. Very cool. Good job, Aaron. Okay. That was number three. So number four is back over to me, and I am going to go to one of my all-time favorite attractions in all of Walt Disney World. It does not turn you upside down. It does not have fancy animatronics. It is a simple pleasure, and I am talking about the Tomorrowland Transit Authority, the People Mover. I am such a huge fan of the People Mover for so many reasons, and I'll start with walking up to it and the fact that there is rarely ever a line. I think part of the reason is that because the capacity of the People Mover is tremendous. It can really move a lot of people through the attraction. It can handle big crowds. It's part of the reason why I think a lot of people overlook it, because they have to go up the speed ramp to get to it. But as a way to preview Tomorrowland, to have a chance to sit down and relax for a few minutes, to get to go through some of the show buildings, to see the inside of Space Mountain, to see the inside of Buzz Lightyear, I think the People Mover is just a Disney classic, and I'm so pleased that it is still open and running. I also like the fact that this was something of a prototype for the technology of a mass transit system that was eventually going to be used in other places, perhaps like Epcot, the city, or throughout the Disney resort. So there are so many things that I enjoy about the People Mover. It is a simple pleasure, and I am so glad that it is still there for us all to enjoy in the Magic Kingdom.
It's one of my favorites. As well. It's one of the ones that I will often do in the evening at the end of a long day where you've been running around the parks all day and you just kind of want to sit and relax. And, you know, especially later in the evening, there's not much line. There's never much of a line for it, but especially later on in the day. And so you sit in it and you get this great, you know, view of Tomorrowland all lit up. I really just want to kind of sit and watch and see all this neon. You can see the castle lit up. If you time it right, you can see some of the fireworks. I've actually seen snippets of the electrical parade from the People Mover. And one of the things you said about Space Mountain earlier, about how when you go in at night, you know, your eyes have to adjust from the sunlight, so you kind of see things clearer early on, which can be kind of a nice experience. The People Mover is kind of the same way, because yes, the ride is slow, but as you're riding through it, you are going, like you said, into the show buildings, and you're going to go kind of into the shop. And ride around above that. You're going to go into the Space Mountain building and actually see some Space Mountain cars go by. And if your eyes aren't having to adjust or having to go in and out of these buildings, you see everything faster, and you don't have to kind of squint and kind of reacclimate yourself. So I think riding the People Mover at night is the way to go, but really anytime you ride it. And what you said about it being kind of a prototype is interesting. I was actually just reading about this, about it wasn't just meant to be a prototype for other attractions or other parks. Walt had intended this to basically replace public transit in cities around the country and the world, really. Hmm. This was supposed to take off and be everywhere. They do have it at, I believe it's an airport, they have a variant of it. This was intended to be a prototype really for the world. And it's kind of, and you have to wonder, had he had his way, would things have been different? Would you know, instead of riding, you know, the subway to get places, we'd be riding a People Mover. It's kind of a neat thing to think about. But more directly to the ride at Walt Disney World. Yeah, it's very iconic Tomorrowland, and it's one of my faves.
Yeah, me too. And it would be interesting to think about if that technology were further implemented in other spots, if we might see it in cities all over the world. I've heard that it's an extremely reliable technology that many mass transit systems, you know, because they get used day in and day out, there's a lot of wear and tear. Sometimes the systems themselves are not so reliable. But something I've heard is that the people mover, because it doesn't really have so many moving parts, it's based on magnets, is an extremely reliable attraction and an extremely reliable way to provide transportation.
I've heard that, the technology about it, if anyone's curious, any of the listeners are curious, go online, do some searching for the technology behind the people mover attraction, because it really is fascinating. And it really was very far ahead of its time for when it was created.
Yep. Good. Number four, people mover. Love it. Number five, Aaron, we're back over to you.
So this one, I think, in a way, kind of epitomizes modern Disney attractions. Because, I mean, for those of us who are old school, we love the old attractions where you're riding through a dark ride and there's cheesy animatronics kind of moving back and forth on their set track and their mouths moving a little bit and there's a song playing. And we love that. That's our thing. But obviously, in this modern day, a lot of people want more interactivity. They want more excitement. They want more out of their attraction. And obviously, it's something that Disney has to adapt to and has to really kind of get some of their rides into the modern mindset. And I think Buzz Lightyear does that. So there's nothing with the ride. You get in a little car with another person, and there's a gun blaster on the front of your car. You each have one. And as you ride through this ride, it's a Toy Story Space Ranger themed thing. There's aliens and robots and monsters and Zerg appears. But all over the ride, it's brightly colored. And really, the set pieces, they're fun. The set pieces themselves are kind of classic Disney. They're just simple moving parts. But all over are these little targets. And you use this blaster and you shoot the targets. And there's a scorekeeper in front of each of you, a little visual display, which is keeping track of your scores. And it's fun. It can be a little competitive if you're sitting next to someone that you really want to try to beat their score. And I think it really just, it takes that kind of classic riding through a ride and looking at the scenery and kind of, the kind of passive experience you think of in that respect, but then adds this whole interactive, shooting gallery, space shooting gallery element. And I really think they did a very good job kind of taking the classic dark ride and bringing it into the modern day in that respect. Plus, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I'm a huge video game player, so being able to sit in a Disney ride and kind of play a shooting video game and compete against the person sitting next to me, which is usually my wife, is a lot of fun. It's a great ride. I love Buzz Lightyear. I love the character. I love the world they created around him with the little green aliens and Zurg. And it's really just, it's one of my favorite of the relatively newer Magic Kingdom rides.
Yeah, all excellent points. I think it's interesting that for years and years, Disney has created attractions that are based on movie characters. And so this is another example of that with Buzz Lightyear and the story of Toy Story. But I think this is one of the first times that Disney was able to incorporate true interactivity, and I'm not even sure this is a real world, but a real word, but gamification, and turn the ride into something that was not just a passive experience where you go by scenes and you're told a story, but something that's very interactive where you can compete, you can score points, you can control the movement of your ride vehicle, and so people have a lot of control over how they interact with that story. And oftentimes there are a lot of debates in the Disney community these days about, well, should Disney be bringing in a certain character or a certain intellectual property into an attraction? So Pandora is a prime example of the discussions that are happening that day or these days, or Frozen. But what I think is it's the quality of the attraction and how they use those characters that are really going to tell us about the longevity of an attraction. So Peter Pan, I think, is a tremendous example where that's based on a movie that's been out for decades and decades, and yet the attraction is a winner because it lets you fly. And so people still love it, even though it's based on something that came out, you know, decades and decades ago. So as we see newer attractions, it will be interesting to think about, yes, it's good that it's based on a certain character. It's okay that it's based on a certain movie franchise, but what's the quality of the attraction itself? And I think Buzz Lightyear really excels in being a quality attraction, even though the Buzz character has been out there for, you know, three movies and many, many years now. It's got that gamification, it's got interactivity, and the attraction itself is fun. It just happens to be based on some characters that have been out for a while.
Agreed, absolutely. And I think it fits, I think Space Ranger Spin fits really well in Tomorrowland in particular, because, you know, Tomorrowland, especially when it first opened, had a lot of attractions kind of based on possible future scenarios, you know, if you could fly, Mission to Mars, stuff like that, that were really, had kind of a serious angle to them. But, you know, when people think science fiction and future stories, a lot of people just think aliens and ray guns and jetpacks and, you know, the kind of very science fiction-y aspects of things. So I really think that Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin is a good kind of balance to that, where it is total science fiction and total just goofy, but that's fun and that's great, and that's a very, you know, Tomorrowland kind of thought process. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and if anyone really wants to try to get a high score, there's a point in the ride where you go into a tunnel with like stars shooting by, almost like kind of a, like a hyperspace looking thing, and there's actually targets that fly by on that kind of like round screen that you're going under. And apparently they're worth quite a number of points. They're hard to hit, but we were going through once, and I was fairly far ahead, and my wife was just shooting blindly and managed to hit something in that tunnel and jumped ahead of me by about 10,000 points. So it's a little, you know, tip there to, you know, don't tell your friend and just try to shoot things in that tunnel.
I think there could be another podcast in this on how to get a higher score on Buzz Lightyear. I've done some research on the internet, and there's certain targets that you can hit which really rack up the points. So we may have to talk about that in a future podcast episode, because it is fun. I think it adds to the re-rideability of Buzz. You want to see if you're still going to beat your the person you're with or a previous score, or if you can find some of these targets that give you huge amounts of points. All things that make Buzz Lightyear a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, and one thing I've learned about it is if you're going to trash talk your significant other in line, be prepared to, you know, if you end up losing by a lot, be sure to humbly apologize for the trash talk you did before. I know this from personal experience.
You know, I understand the cosmic rays serves up big slices of humble pie, so you might just be able to head over there and buy a piece or two.
Oh, cosmos. You didn't put that on the list, and we should have.
You're right. Sorry, Ray. You didn't. Your place didn't make it on there. But we still do have one item, and that's number six. And so if you've ever listened to the World of Walt podcast, you know that the exit music is based on one of my favorite all-time attractions, a true Disney classic, the Carousel of Progress. So, yes, I know the Carousel of Progress is based on old technology, originally developed for the 1964-65 World's Fair. I know that it's slow-moving, and it talks about the history of electricity. Maybe hard to think of perhaps a drier subject than that, but I am a huge fan of the Carousel of Progress. I like it because of its historical significance, the fact that it was a key attraction that put in some ways Disney on the map for developing animatronics. I love the fact that it includes over time two different very snappy Sherman Brothers songs. I love the storytelling. I love the following of a family through history. I love the sense of Americana that is in the Carousel of Progress. And I fear that one of these days that prime real estate will have to be reused for another purpose, and we'll have to say our goodbyes to the Carousel of Progress. I don't know of any firm firm plans for that, but I could see where it might have to happen one of these days. But I have always, always thought the Carousel of Progress was an amazing attraction and an amazing show, and it is one of my favorites. I make a point to see it as often as I can.
Yeah, it really is a fun one, and it's one that, you know, and it's interesting as a as a historical piece, because, like you said, it's the future from the 60s. So, the whole story starts before electricity, and they do have kind of the kind of goofy future scenario with the voice-activated stove and stuff like that. But it's interesting to me to ride it because of the fact that you're looking at the idea of the future from the 60s. And it's kind of neat to go on it and watch it and kind of see where we are now versus where, you know, people when they made that attraction thought we would be. So is it super high-tech and super futuristic and super, you know, space age? No. But is it a cool look at, you know, the future as seen from the past? Absolutely. It's a lot of fun. It's a classic. I mean, it's definitely one of the Walt Disney personally classic attractions. And I think it really, you know, it's been in Tomorrowland a long time, you know, from back when stuff like that was still shiny and new and possible. So I really, it's a great one. And I think it really, in some ways, more than any other attraction in Tomorrowland, sums up what Tomorrowland is about, which is that constant progress, that constant forward motion, and that constant, you know, striving for more and advancing, and, you know, as technology gets better. And it really is, it's really the last one of that kind of attraction at Tomorrowland. So hopefully it's going to be around for a long, long time.
I hope so, too. And I think it kind of epitomizes the conundrum, I like that word, the conundrum that Tomorrowland has to constantly struggle with, which is how do you represent tomorrow without becoming outdated? And so the final scene in the Carousel of Progress is a great example of that, where they're talking about video discs and cell phones. And it makes you wonder, well, should they restore the attraction back so that the last scene is about the 60s, and that way it's the future as seen at that point in time when it was created, or should Disney have a little secret budget someplace so that they constantly update the last scene and talk about 3D printers? It's a difficult problem to solve, and I think Tomorrowland overall has done a very good job of it by using the retro edition of the future. And perhaps if Disney decides to, in the long term, keep the Carousel of Progress around, maybe that's a way they can deal with that final scene by going back to the future as seen from a long time ago. And just as an aside, one other thing I always enjoy about the Carousel of Progress is the video that plays before you go in. It's a video that shows Walt Disney having kind of fun with the Sherman Brothers, who put together the song for it. And it's fun to see Walt sort of promoting the attraction and talking about its development. And that's a great thing about the Carousel of Progress, too. It's just got Walt's fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's long gone from Disneyland, I'm really happy that it's still at Walt Disney World, and you know, people can still enjoy it. And, you know, and I hope that, you know, it's one of those ones, it's not fast, it's not super exciting, it's not, you know, so it's one that I think a lot of people kind of pass by. I think the last time I was actually on it, there were a bunch of people on it, but it was also raining, and I think some of them just trying to get out of the rain, which is sad, because I really think it is a great one for people to see, whether they be fans of, like, Disney history and want to see, you know, a classic attraction that Walt had a hand in, or they want to see kind of what people thought the future was going to be like and stuff like that. So I really think it is one that is a good one for people to see.
Yeah.
And it's fun, and it's goofy, and it's you know, and there's a lot of humor in it, and the song is great, and, you know, there's nothing bad about it.
Absolutely. All excellent things about the Carousel of Progress. Okay, this was a great list today, Aaron. The top 6 reasons to appreciate Tomorrowland. So 1, theming. 2, Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. 3, Space Mountain. 4, the Tomorrowland Transit Authority or People Mover. 5, Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin. And 6, the Carousel of Progress. So Aaron, if people are interested in finding out more about what you're up to, how can they do that?
Well, I write a Disney blog. It is called Magic and Misadventures. That is at magicandmisadventures.com. And on that blog, I write about Disney in general, generally Disney parks is what I focus on. And it can be anything from ranting and raving about, you know, something I'm upset about. It can be reviews about tours or attractions. It can be just random thoughts off the top of my head. I do post occasional do-it-yourself projects, like decorating magic bands or making, you know, matching T-shirts for a trip. And from that website, there are links to all my social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, where Magic Mystery Adventures has a presence on all of those. So once people head to magicmysteryadventures.com, they can find me all over.
And as I always say when we speak, I truly do enjoy your site. I love the detail you put into your posts, and I like the take that you have on the world of Disney. So great site, magicandmisadventures.com. And as always, Aaron, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. I love Tomorrowland. It was fun to talk about it for a while.
Me too. Thank you. Appropriately today, we are heading out to the Tomorrowland Area Music Loop. And yes, we have made it through the list of the top 6 reasons to appreciate Tomorrowland, but that doesn't mean our conversation is over. I would love to hear what you think about our list. Do you have a different idea or something you'd like to add to the list? You can do that. Check out the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/57. That page works well on smartphones, tablets, and desktops. Leave your comments in the comments section and check out what other people are saying as well. I'd like to thank everyone who's been in touch, and I would love to hear from you as well. It's easy to get in touch with me. Let me know what you think about today's show, or just stop by and say hi. You can send an email to me at info@worldofwalt.com. Leave a voicemail message for me at 407-391-5023. You can leave a voicemail message at worldofwalt.com/voicemail, or follow me on social media, facebook.com/worldofwalt or pinterest.com/worldofwalt. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I would appreciate it if you would spread the word. Tell your family and your friends about it. So to wrap up for today, I would, as always, like to give you a heartfelt thank you for spending a little bit of your time with me today. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the worldofwalt.com site, where you can read interesting Disney articles and chat with other folks who enjoy Disney in the forums and in the comments sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that is extremely cool. Thank you so much for being a part of it. So until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
Just a dream away. So there's a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.